Yes, very clever.
Matt there doing a impression of what a Dalek would sound like if it was playing the part of the Emperor. From Star Wars.
Yeah.
What's your favourite Oscar bait movie?
Well, we've been talking quite a lot about La La Land before we recorded. I was very happy with La La Land. Spotlight was surprisingly enjoyable. Liked that one quite a lot. It is very Oscar baiting.
I fell asleep.
You fell asleep in Spotlight?
It's the only film I've fallen asleep. Since then I've fallen asleep during many more films, but
you're getting
that was
old.
The first film I fell asleep watching in the cinema.
Boy. I mean, I don't blame you. It is a pretty kind of slow-paced film. It is mostly just people talking to each other, but I liked it. I liked that about it. Did Social Network win any Oscars with that Oscar bait?
Ooh.
You could argue that it might be.
It's Oscar bait, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked The King's Speech.
Yeah.
I thought it was charming and funny.
Yeah.
And I thought the actors were good in it.
I think that's probably, you know.
Are you writing for Empire?
I have never been paid by a publication called Empire.
That clears that up.
Yeah, it might be a controversial opinion, but I like The King's Speech.
No, I mean,
and I might not get away with it. I might get brought down online, but I'm going to say it.
King's Speech is fine. I feel like it didn't have much weight to it. Like, it's just kind of there, and it's fluffy, and
it is
funny.
Super fluffy.
But it is funny, and it is well acted. And
I think it sheds light on a time that doesn't get a lot of necessarily attention. Like, in terms of, it gets a lot of attention for kind of this is good, this is bad.
Yeah,
it doesn't get a lot of nuanced attention based around like, okay, so like some of the people in British royalty and on the rise of the Nazis,
yeah,
were kind of Nazis. Well, let's pay attention to it.
It's kind of, this isn't funny anymore, this is just a story about movies, but placing it into context of movies, I read a review of Darkest Hour, which is out, just came out.
Gary Oldman,
Winston Churchill.
Okay.
I saw it, it was good. I read this review that
you just said Gary Oldman and Winston Churchill like they co-starred in
Gary Oldman and Winston Churchill
in Darkest Hour.
They have fucking chemistry.
Yeah, let me tell you, it's really impressive. I thought the hologram stuff was a bit much. No, review...
That full-on sex scene was incredible.
Probably too much, yeah.
Yeah.
I Call Me By Your Name for the modern era. so stupid.
I will never surrender.
Okay, no, what the fuck was I saying? This fucking review.
Yeah.
Described Darkest Hour as being part of a post-King's Speech kind of prestige drama. And looking at it, there were prestige movies, you know, historical movies before that, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was a tonal shift in them that I think probably began around that time with King's Speech. So it is important. It does have a place in kind of movie history.
Everything since then is trying to be that.
Yes, to an extent. Darkest Hour, pretty good. Yeah, I recommend it.
And we've got
My favorite Oscar bait movie is Iron Lady. I like it when they found the Horcruxes and stabbed them with the basilisk fang.
It's a good bit. I liked that bit. Yeah, no, I agree.
My favorite bit in the Iron Lady is the bit on the racetrack where her assistant passes her a suitcase. And the suit comes out of the suitcase. And she's like, yeah, ready to fight your Mickey Rourke.
My favourite part of the Iron
Lady. Who's got, like, whips. And he's going mental and what's her name? Who plays the Iron Lady?
Is it Helen Mirren?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
Yeah, she's like, I'm coming at you, bro.
My favorite part,
Iron Lady suit.
My favorite part of the Iron Lady is when she is stuck in the cave right at the beginning,
right.
And she's like a prisoner, but she makes that suit to transform her into the Iron Lady. That's really cool.
My favorite part of the Iron Lady is when Elijah Wood has to throw a ring at her. And she falls over. She cracks in half and falls over.
Yeah. My favourite part of the Iron Lady.
That's how the film ends, isn't
it? My favourite part of the Iron Lady is when they actually take off her mask and it turns out that she's just like this kind of old frail man.
Yeah.
And he dies and he actually needed the suit to breathe.
Mm.
And it's really, it's kind of poignant because he's a villain, but you sort of see the humanity in him.
And ironically called the Iron Lady.
Yes.
Using an iron lung to breathe.
Another one of my favourite parts of the Iron Lady is the bit where. Han Solo has been frozen in carbonite. And Harrison Ford looks over at Meryl Streep.
And
she goes, "I love you." And he goes, "I know, you're the Iron Lady."
That was actually a great, really really emotional part. Like, I teared up when I was watching that one for the first time. Really, really good.
Another bit I like.
Yeah.
Right.
Tell me, Tom.
Is the beginning of the movie where the title pops up and it goes Iron Lady, and she's running around this ruin listening to Come and Get Your Love by Redbone.
that is a great bit. It sort of shows her more sort of carefree side.
Yeah
That's really, I really like that bit, and it's really well shot as well.
Another bit I like about the Iron Lady is that bit where Scott Pilgrim has to fight the all Iron of Lady. Her evil exes.
All of the Iron Lady's seven evil exes.
They're the League of Iron Exes.
My favourite part of the Iron Lady is when she is driving away from... No, I don't remember.
My favourite bit of the Iron Lady, right?
Skip me.
Is when she gets stabbed, like that. She loses the duel with Russell Crowe, but then stabs him with a little secret dagger, and then Russell Crowe walks out into a field of wheat, and everyone. And dies an honourable death, and she skulks off into the shadows.
My favourite bit of the Iron Lady, another gem from this movie, is the bit where she's defusing a bomb.
Yeah.
In Afghanistan or whatever. I can't really remember.
It's somewhere like
and
that.
And Jeremy Renner's shouting at her from the other side of the street, going, "Don't do that! It's the Hurt Locker." Don't enter the Hurt Locker.
That locker
you'll never be able to get out.
That locker will end up being hurt. Really badly.
My favorite. No, let's. We've talked about the Iron Lady now.
My favorite
thing
about the
minutes.
Iron Lady is when we start making Oscar bait movies.
Wow, we're into the Iron Lady right now.
My favorite bit of the Iron Lady is the bit in which.
They get into police academy, and they start doing all sorts of training, but they're rubbish at it, and all the goofs ensue, and someone makes some cool sound effects with his mouth.
My favorite part of the Iron Lady is when she invents the social network.
Yeah,
God, she did a lot, didn't she?
Yeah.
She did an absolute
a storied life.
Favorite bit of the Iron Lady, like another bit, obviously. Like I've had many favourite bits.
Of course.
In that
nobody
movie.
Could ever be asked to choose just one.
But it's the bit in which her and her friends decide to murder Elle Fanning and eat her.
It's really...
Because she's so beautiful.
It's a tough watch.
I think my favourite bit of the Iron Lady is when Birdman...
Yeah. God, when he turns up.
And he's...
And from then on, the film is all one take.
Yeah.
God. Yeah.
You know, you're reminding me. I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but it has so much in it. It's really packed with content.
Like, Margaret Thatcher lived such an interesting life.
She did, didn't she?
Yeah. Nobody like her. Yeah. Thank fuck for that. All right, let's move on.
Right.
My favourite bit of the lady, right, is where she stole all the milk. So we've got one from Joe Thompson, and that is a phone call with everyone.
A phone call with everyone. So this is high concept.
This is 2.5 hours of unintelligible garbage. Like, you just can't hear it, pick out a single voice.
2.5 hours of just flicking between Skype chats.
Yeah, it's kind of like a sort of window on the world kind of
thing. It's about the NSA.
Yeah.
Like, it's about someone who is...
Benedict Cumberbatch
works for the NSA and is in charge of...
Prism.
Like, yeah, the, like...
the program, the surveillance program.
I thought you said prison.
He's in charge of prison.
What do you think the NSA does?
Prism.
Sends people to prison for talking about things. No, so he's in charge of the... of Prism, of wiretapping and stuff. And, like, so he can... He has a machine that can switch between every, like, phone...
Everything
phone
that's going
line
on
in the country.
Right now, yeah.
And I think, like, at some point, this will be like a personal story, where he lives his life through other people's lives.
It starts out as a framing device, and we just see these sort of snippets of other people's conversations, and you think it's going to be a sort of like an anthology almost, right?
I've got it.
Oh, it's like it's Rear Window, right? It's like it's he gets super involved in someone's story.
The Rear Window for the modern age.
I was going to say,
yes, that'll win Oscars.
I was going to say, because it's Oscar bait.
Yeah,
I think he should. Listen in on a conversation about this woman who's having like a load of money troubles. She's really behind on like payments for shit.
Oh my God.
He really, really like fancies her because she's gorgeous.
He looked her up on Facebook.
I think maybe he just likes the sound of her voice. He doesn't actually like. He doesn't know and he doesn't want to know.
Yeah, okay.
That's part of the fantasy, right?
Yeah, I guess. And then
I don't know how he gets her money in that case.
And also, how do we find out about this? He's got to talk to someone about it, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, co-worker, Jack Black.
I think he just watches a. It's a Skype conversation. Because you've got to have visual elements to it.
Nah,
just audio.
It's just black screen for most of the film.
He's just watching through the webcams.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it has
why
to be...
is it called a phone call with everyone, Tom?
Yep.
No, it's some phone calls, at some Skype, and eventually he starts on the phone calls, likes the sound of her voice, moves on to Skype, gets involved in the life.
Here's the thing, though.
It's creepy.
He becomes a mysterious benefactor, and suddenly $1 million appears in their bank account.
I can't help feeling we're missing a trick by not having a camera trained on Benedict Cumberbatch for minutes at a time while he's just listening.
Oh, sure.
Like,
long
subtlety in his expressions.
First scene in the movie.
Like you said, it's like Rear Window. The whole film, the camera never leaves the room that he's in.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he starts getting involved in this person's story, which is when, like, she gets a new boyfriend.
Yeah.
No.
And
he sends a SWAT team.
Because he
SWATs her.
He jumps at something, like there's a bang, and he mistakes something
so
for him
creepy.
Being like
it's
abusive.
Really yeah.
So he sends a SWAT team around suddenly, and then it starts being traced back to him. So it's like he sent a SWAT team around. Mm. It was nothing. Mm. And now his bosses are asking why, like he's on two fronts trying to stop. His bosses are asking why he's so focused on looking into this one thing.
Yeah.
And also people are trying to find him on the other side because he's made a false SWAT team thing.
So there's a risk of this all coming out, and it sort of leads to, I think, a climactic scene with the president, who's probably fictionalized. Like, I don't think it's Obama. I think they just make up a president.
Yeah.
Who wants to play the president?
Donald Trump.
Patrick Swayze.
Donald Trump to do a cameo.
I think it's Patrick Swayze. Definitely Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze is quite dead.
We get Trump to do a cameo as Obama.
No.
Seven levels
yes.
of no. It leads up to this climactic scene.
Cameron Diaz
as the president. Yep. Leads up to this climactic scene where he has to answer for what's going on because it's all threatening to burst. And he is given a choice, right?
Yep.
He can keep his job. He makes a lot of money. Uh-huh. He's very powerful. But he can never talk to this woman that he's in love with again.
Yeah.
Or he will be forced to leave, and he'll have to leave the country. Okay?
That seems like
a
real easy let off.
So what does he do? He leaks it. He's Edward Snowden.
Oh.
And it's not revealed until the final 5 minutes that he's Edward Snowden.
It's like one of those reveals like in Star Trek Into Darkness where Benedict Cumberbatch went, I'm Khan.
Yeah, it's that.
And everyone in the cinema was meant to be going,
and everyone went, yeah. Yeah.
From Wrath of Khan.
We get it, yeah. We get it. Yeah.
From the Wrath thereof?
It's a film I haven't seen, but it's a bad guy.
Yeah, I get it. Like, no. But everyone went, yeah, I know.
It's
the same. It's going to be the same.
More, like...
Because as soon as you talk about a film with your friend, you're like, what's the conversation with everybody about? Edward Snowden.
Yeah, Edward Snowden. Who's the main character? Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
Answer. There you go.
Yeah.
So it is a big reveal. It kind of falls flat. I don't think it matters. I think the message still comes across.
Yeah. Surveillance is
That's a guaranteed Oscar winner right there. Overly simplistic retelling of recent history
and the
starring
judges,
Benedict Cumberbatch.
And the judges are seeing it kind of out of context of culture. So they're sort of they go, oh, that's really good. When really, like,
everyone else has gone,
yeah, everyone's like, we get it. Yeah.
It's a pretty problematic.
Oh, approach. For sure. They never address how problematic it is. And then
I think it's creepy. Like, directorial, you can make Benedict Cumberbatch creepy.
Well, you have to ask, like, is he punished for his actions? And the answer, if he's Edward Snowden, is no.
But is that not an issue you can paint, right?
The creepy version is the studio cut. The director's cut is one that's super happy, in which
like Cameron Diaz, like as the president, goes, "This is fucking creepy. Go to jail."
the
slam of a cell door.
Cut
to credits.
Is one where Benedict Cumberbatch and Alison Brie get together.
Alison Brie's not in this movie.
Yeah, she is.
What?
She plays the woman.
Okay, so Alison
Brie. To be fair, we never cast that woman.
We never did.
Yeah, we never cast.
What
that
you're
woman,
saying,
Alison
Tom, is
again.
One way or another, Alison Brie's winning an Oscar.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, fine.
And then in a post credit scene, Cameron Diaz invites Alison Brie to the White House, and they talk about something other than a man.
Yeah. Yep.
Tick.
Ticking that Bechdel box. We haven't done that for a while.
Yeah, we haven't.
It's been mostly male-related.
Last
films.
Week's film had one woman, two women in it, three women in it. One of them didn't have a speaking part.
We forgot to give them dialogue.
And was just having an affair with the head teacher.
Seems fine. Doesn't seem problematic. Jesus.
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
And one of the other woman was a bad guy. The other woman was Millie Bobby Brown. The protagonist, to be fair, but all of her friends were boys.
The kids from we just said the kids from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
So.
You didn't even
there's another woman one in that now.
There's another girl one, yeah.
Oh, spoilers. Oh, okay.
Sadie something, I think.
Yeah. Well, the kids from Stranger Things. I don't know any of them, right?
It's Millie Bobby Brown and the kids from Stranger
Mad Max.
Things.
Mad Max from Stranger Things.
Mad Max from Stranger Things.
We're due it. We are due that.
Yeah, we are, actually.
We skipped over a decade. Mm. We're now nostalgic for the 80s. I reckon we need to be nostalgic for the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised no one's doing 70s era style movies.
Do you know why?
Why?
They were terrible.
Wasn't a good era.
I suddenly remembered Star Wars is like out.
Wow. Yeah. That's out now at your local cinema hall.
For the rest of the year.
They can't get rid of it. Seriously.
They actually can't get rid of it.
It's like an infection. once you let it in, you can't get rid of it. You can only treat it with extra ticket sales. So go and see Star Wars again at your local independent cinema, please.
Yeah.
Before they lose all of their money.
Yep. that screen is now taken up by empty screening for the rest of the
year. They're
going
to rename it the Star Wars screen.
Yeah. So anyway... It sounds like you're angling for a satirical one rather than a Goof Troop one.
I think that's probably true.
Oh, there's so many satirical. There's been so many satirical. I've kind of
it's
just
a satirical
avoided them.
Category.
It's because it's become an easy hot take, right?
Yeah.
Like I've been the coldest take around.
Let's
like,
avoid let's avoid any takes of any temperature.
Guys, I know this might be a bit of a hot take, might be a bit controversial, but I think there's too many white-led films getting Oscars at the moment.
Oh, Matt,
more,
that is.
More black people-led films should be...
Matt, tell it to a hashtag.
Should be on Oscar
Moonlight
time.
Moonlight won Best Picture last year.
Allegedly. Yeah, it's one of them.
But it won Best Picture, but only after...
After it had been given to the whitest film around, where the white man saves jazz.
Yeah, yeah. Where no one cared.
So that's my hot take. And I know I'm going to get hate for it. I'm going to get flamed on in the forums.
You are. The forums are going to flame you so bad.
I'm going to get flamed in the forums. Mm.
Can I give you my hot take?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I reckon, and you know, you'll have to stick with me on this, but I think there aren't enough women.
Okay.
In general.
Yeah, I think there should be more women.
Explain.
Well, think about it. For the last sort of thousands of years, there have been more men.
Right.
By a significant degree. I think it's something like for every 10 men, there are only 7 women or something.
Right.
So, something like that, right? Yeah, there's not nearly enough women.
Yeah, and so I think
for every 5 men, there are...
Are you trying to round, pare this
mathematically...
down?
Yeah.
3.5.
so it's... And that's a real problem, you know? I think it's just a case of we have to redress the balance. And there should be more women. And I know that's a hot take. I do.
It is. It is a hot.
And I know
take.
I'm going to get hate for it.
Yeah,
I know that people are going to be tweeting at me.
You're going to get ice burned.
Are you proposing a one woman policy?
I'm proposing as many women as possible policy.
Oh, fair.
A pro women. You know.
So what you're saying is like, I wish I knew the name of who did this song, but like the mid 2000s rap song, garage song, one. Point one on the action list. We need some more girls in here. Two. We need some more girls in here.
Yeah.
Three. We need some more girls in here.
Well,
four. We need some more girls in here. Now, hear me out.
I've got a fourth plan.
Hear me out. There's too many men. Too many, many men. 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 One, we need some more girls in here. Two, we need some more girls in here. Three, we need some more girls in here. Four, we need some more girls in here. I think dogs should vote.
Matt, Tom, do you have any hot takes?
Hot takes. I want to see a...
You boy, bring me your hottest take.
Hottest take, fresh off the hot plate.
The take plate.
The ideas hot plate.
Give me a spicy take.
I think the winner this year is going to be that cut of The Last Jedi where they've cut all the men out. They've cut all the men out. So it's a longer film than if they cut all the women out.
I love how much of a safe space that person needed. Do you know what I mean? Like
they spent so much time.
They will be the person. They will be the first person to be like, "Oh, need some safe space as Snowflake," and then they like edited a film so that it was safe for them.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I mean, it was safe for them anyway.
Yeah.
No one's triggered by just women.
It just existed. Well, apparently they are.
Yeah.
They made it. They literally made it.
Oh,
they spent quite a lot of time.
The thing is, right? I think it's. It almost feels like self-parodying.
Yeah, it doesn't does, it? But that's how right that's activists. How far
that's where we are. That's where we are now.
So, like, everyone's laughing at that idea, really.
But somebody did it.
Yeah.
Ooh, 3 points?
300 point.
No, that's too many.
No, what? In bin tissue.
Going back to Patrick's hot take of there should be more women,
be
just
more
cut
women.
All the men out of The Last Jedi.
Life.
If you cut all the men out of The Last Jedi, it might make sense.
Let's see.
Like, in terms of editing.
So, wait, Rey's on the Force phone to no one.
Yeah.
She's gone to an island for no reason.
Yeah.
yeah, now I think
because,
about it.
Because that's... no one is the threat.
and they have to stop nobody.
There aren't any female empire.
So that she can...
Apart from Phasma. She's just Phasma on a ship.
I'd watch it.
It might give Phasma some weight. Instead of just being there.
Yeah. I wish we had more Phasma.
God. I just like the idea. Like,
the thing is, right?
You've just got long shots of the Imperial flagship, right? And then, like, it just keeps going, and then it just keeps going. Well,
disintegrate at light speed, because that was Laura Dern.
Yeah, it was. But like, you just throughout most of the film, you're just cutting into long shots of ships, and then cutting to Laura Dern, and then to Carrie Fisher, and then just another long shot.
The thing is, right.
They're being followed
by just big oppressive ships.
Yeah, we don't find
out. You still get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the film? George Lucas's first film.
THX.
It would very much be a return to a kind of THX style storytelling, wouldn't it?
Where it's all visual.
It's all just like, and there's a load big of ships in space and long distance.
Yeah,
and then at some point in the middle of the film, where like Rey's just been on an island for a bit, running around and sitting down, and then putting her hand on the floor.
We can have some pogs.
Some pogs. You've got the little
is
Muppet
Chewbacca
ladies.
A guy?
I think so.
Probably. Could you count them as?
I think
pogs is ambiguous. Chewbacca probably not.
Then you cut back.
Let's
to...
Let's stick to our principles.
You cut back to inside the Imperial flagship, where what's her name?
Admiral Holdo.
No, inside the Imperial flagship. Rose. Rose is just running around, like on her own, and then arguing.
Followed by BB-8 in a box.
Yeah. And then cut to the only person we know is aboard this ship, Phasma.
There's a bit.
Oh dear.
Where Phasma turns up and Rose shoots her, and it, like, her armor deflects the blasters. So, and then Rose goes and hides behind a box. She shoots Phasma and goes, "Oh no!"
Runs away.
and then they get down to a planet in which nothing happens except Rose rams an empty ship off the road,
gives a bro a coin,
and then these oppressive.
And then you can't have the bro. No.
Rose rams an empty skiff off a path to destruction.
Yeah,
and Leia sits there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leia sits there
and Rey moves rocks.
Yeah. Rey opens up. Well, to be fair, that does work.
Yeah.
Because you've got the oppressive just machines.
Yeah.
They're about to fire the Death Star, mini Death Star laser at the door.
We have to stop talking about Star Wars.
Just cut to Rey moving rocks and opening the way.
Worthy.
And that's it.
That's not true. Has Star Wars ever won an Oscar?
No. Okay, so from Ross_Originals, we've got Millennial Dome. Now, I'm thinking this is the only young adult film to get nominated for an Oscar.
It won't win, but it's nice to give it the nomination.
Yeah.
So we've got it right. There's got to be some parallels here where, like,
it's
the Hunger Games.
Simpsons movie.
Right. imagine this. It's like the Hunger Games.
Mm.
Right, it's a YA dystopian fiction.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's probably the Millennial Dome in that case.
Yeah. In which they... that your belly?
Yeah.
In which they somehow, like, take something from people, right? They take the children of... of a generation.
Mm.
The problem is that none of the children could afford, none of the people of this generation who were left after the Hunger Games could afford to have any children. So there are none. They just can't. There's no one for the state to take.
There is, like, a line in the book, definitely, that is just like, yeah, if we keep killing people, humanity isn't gonna survive.
Maybe it's a Hunger Games movie.
Maybe it's
literally like set in the same world. We don't see the games and stuff.
Mm.
But yeah, there's this initiative. They're trying to steal all the children. Because the child murdering tournaments didn't work so well.
Or it's a YA dystopian novel in which none of the millennial generation can afford homes.
Yeah.
So
tell me more about this.
They all pitching together to build,
A dome
for all of them to go.
Yes,
well, all the millennials live in a society under this dome.
Yeah.
Tell me
about the rules of this dome. Do you get kicked out when you kind of get older, or do you get everyone just stay there because they are millennials? For
they'll all be aging at the same time because they're a single generation.
An entire generation of human beings just decides to live in this
to sequester
dome.
Itself I think away it was, from the rest yeah, of humanity.
I think it was provided you're born in this from this year to this year. I think it's something like 85 to 99, maybe something like that.
Okay,
I don't know. 18-year-olds now would be millennials.
Okay, yeah.
So that would be, I don't know.
Maybe we tell this from two people's perspectives, right?
Oh yeah, split narrative.
One person and the first part of the. First part of the film is set within the Millennial Dome.
Yeah.
The second part is set outside the Millennial Dome by a person who didn't go in and regrets it.
Oh, man.
And then at some point, the Millennial Dome opens and someone, like, steps out.
And there's a giant rocket ship.
Someone steps out.
We're going to the fucking moon.
Right. That's it. Okay, so...
Moonillennials.
Start of the film...
Oh, sorry, Lunillennials.
Start of the film, we see TV news... saying, like, it seems that a whole generation is using their...
Oh, we're a little ways into it now, I think. I think it's, like, day 425 of the Millennial
Dome.
Oh, man,
they've been there for 15 years.
I was going to say 40 years.
I think 15.
50, 60-odd.
I think 15 because I think that, like, people outside should still be alive.
Yes. Mm.
So, like... And we start to sort of like we are only telling this from someone who's leaving the Millennial Dome, right? And we start it in a kind of Tron way, like everyone's got like VR, they're all like plugged into
future
a thing,
tech kind of Ready Player One,
sustainable systems inside and stuff like that. It's like
it's
solar
got its own
powered.
Internet.
Yeah,
yeah. The dome is entire solar panels.
Yeah. They are...
And everyone outside is really pissed because they put the dome over New York City and they were like, we wanted that! God damn it, guys!
You were thinking New York City. I was thinking the Grand Canyon.
It's always the Grand
always
Canyon
the Grand
with
Canyon.
You, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. an entire dome over the Grand Canyon.
How does a dome over the Grand Canyon
work? Yeah, that wouldn't
you can still
work.
You can get in. You can still get in from underneath.
You can. Well, they built walls to cover all the entrances. All
right, Trump.
Carry on. So, there's this dome, and it opens, and people step out, and they're like, what's been happening? There's some of the power goes out in the Millennial Dome, right? So, like, first 10 minutes is set establishing what this place is like. Mm. And then... there's a reveal when we realise that they're in the real world.
Mm.
Because it's so different in the Millennial Dome that you wouldn't recognise
it. It's so futury and built on technology.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Oh my god, this is wonky.
Because the Millennial Dome's been built and there's no Millennials anymore, everything's reverted back to the Old West.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, no one knew how to use the internet anymore.
Yeah.
So
the internet just broke.
Yeah,
it's like hyper-pastoral kind of thing.
Because basically what happened was, you either had people who... knew who sort of knew how to use the internet but didn't know how to run it, or you had children who knew how to work iPads but hadn't figured out how to make them.
Yeah,
I think this is a legitimately great idea.
So you've got Alison Brie wandering through a Western town, with like her Google glasses on, like holograms and stuff, like all this new tech, and stuff, and then you've got like Western style. Dressed up with babies with like broken iPads and stuff. Like, it's incredible. Like,
but you've got people, everyone is dressed in the American flag. Like,
well, that might be a bit much. I was going to say there are flags everywhere.
Yeah.
I think dressing them in the flag might be a little bit much.
Have you never been to America?
Like Jerry Halliwell, but with an American flag, not a...
Yeah, somehow it's weird when it's America. I guess it was weird when Jerry Halliwell...
You remember, you're not allowed to let the American flag touch the floor, but you can wear it as trousers.
So he's on stilts.
You can wear it as a sarong.
Yeah. You can wear it as a hat. You can wear it this or that. I'm Dr. Seuss, by the way.
You can wear it as your sleeve. You can wear it on your knee.
Because this has just been world built.
Yeah. Well,
there's got to be conflict, right, between the two sides.
Well, the reason they've gone out is Alison Brie has been sent out to salvage some supplies from the outside because half of the power has gone out. People have come out of their VR like stupid and like, what the hell? Alison Brie is one of these people who, like, she's obsessed with the outside. She's obsessed with, like, what
the stories of the outside. The myths.
So she watches all old movies and she, like, that sort of thing.
That's
she's,
our Oscar bait stuff. And,
nostalgia.
And she's
Breakfast
in the team.
And stuff.
She's in the team that's being sent out to find out why the power's gone, right? She comes out and, someone's detonated a bomb on the outside of the dome and it's knocked out a load of solar power panels.
Oh, no.
Like, someone's attacked the dome.
Terrorists.
So she's got to go
generational out. Terrorists.
They go out and they're we don't have the supplies to fix this. You're going to have to venture out and try and find one specific part.
Oh, that's got to be the bulk of the movie, doesn't it? We can't spend that much time in the millennial zone.
No, it's about 10-20 minutes.
Oh, a bit more than that.
Like,
but yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you can establish a world. Like, it doesn't have to be fucking Valyrian.
Thank God for that.
You know, you don't have to just talk about the place you're in.
I'm thinking this one is definitely being nominated and winning a load of technical awards.
Yeah.
Because this is trash, story-wise.
And they go, but that's the thing. They go out and they're like, everyone out there is like, oh, you can't make it yourself. Back in our day, oh, you need something from me, do you?
And Alison Brie just shoots them all, like bam, like, bam.
I'm gonna say Kiefer Sutherland plays like the head of this town, and he's like, oh, right. You need our help to get some parts to you. The twist is at the end that he set the bomb to damage the things because he wanted to get in. And, so, like, while he's like, well, if you want to do that, you're going to have to learn how to do some hard work for a change. And then he, like, sets her to toil in the fields. while raiders are attacking the Millennial Dome and trying to get in.
This is where she meets Amy Poehler, who is the other side of this film, and they band together to
Amy Poehler's also working in the fields, but she's the same age. She just didn't get into the Millennial Dome because she kind of sided with the outsiders on that thing when she was a kid.
I think
this movie is genuinely, like, pretty cool. Yeah. I would watch it. The question is, how does it end? Like, she has to save the Millennial Dome, or does she decide it's better to
the Millennial Dome opens and, like, from the roof down, like, sort of slides.
You really
want
a rocket, don't you?
There's a fucking rocket going to the moon.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, the dome.
It's an M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, yeah.
The dome is the tip of the rocket.
this New York City sized dome.
The whole thing goes
whoosh. They're not able to stop Kiefer Sutherland and his boys, who are all riding horses, getting into the Millennial Dome. Like, they're throwing dynamite and stuff, and the doors suddenly
sticks of dynamite, red, glowing red sticks of dynamite. Cartoon dynamite.
The doors open and of this thing, and they retract. Like, the whole dome goes into one sort of slides into one thing and then sinks below the earth as like this enormous rocket emerges. And
everyone's boarding. They fly off into the moon.
Yep. That's the end of the film.
Yeah. Alison Brie and Amy Poehler kiss.
This is how our generation become like preachy, like the previous generation.
Yeah, it's a Oscar bait film for the future.
Yeah. give it 10 years.
Yeah.
Oscar's when there's another generation to blame for everything.
Okay, so from Adam Owen, we've got My Family Need Me to Be a Ventriloquist. Not gonna lie, this is a pretty big contender for this week's one.
This is like a Weekend at Bernie's sort of, like.
My family. Why do they need?
My family are dead.
Why do they need them to be Avenger?
Oh my god! My family are dead, and
only my dad's dead, and only he had the details to the bank account, and you, like, for some reason the bank don't believe he's dead.
Wait, is it like how in the first Human Centipede there were just three people, and then in the second there were lots and lots more? Is this like Weekend at Bernie's 2, but instead of propping up one person, he has to prop up a whole family?
I don't see why.
that's the scale in which you'd make a sequel to.
You have to pretend that more dead people are alive.
Weekends at Bernie's.
Is that like Aliens?
Yeah.
Weekends at Bernie's.
Okay, so the main character, the son of the family, played by
Alison Brie.
No, I won't accept it. This time around, I won't accept it.
Zac Efron.
Yeah, okay, Zac Efron. Yeah. Sure. His whole family are prestige actors because they don't have to do anything else in the movie but be dead.
Helen Mirren.
Yes. Tom Hanks.
Meryl Streep.
Wait, Helen Mirren and Meryl Streep?
Yeah, Helen Mirren and Meryl Streep are, like, fused at the hip. They're Siamese twins.
Oh, Christ, that makes things
and
difficult.
And Tom Hanks.
Conjoined nowadays.
Conjoined twins.
Okay. Is this the Addams Family? Because it sounds like the Addams Family.
No.
No, because they're not. They're dead.
They're all dead.
Except for the son. Yeah.
At which point, why would my family need me to be a ventriloquist?
Because
it was their dying wish.
The family dying wish to be puppeted.
To be in one last show.
Yes.
They're a performing troupe. They have to.
It's a musical.
Oh, you know what?
You better believe it's a musical, Tom.
It's a musical. With a curse. This family have been cursed, murdered, and cursed to never be able to rest, so they're ghosts, until the whole family perform together once more. It's a super fan, right? Oh, right, so it's a performing family, you know, like the sort of like Traveling Wilburys?
That's not a family.
No. The Waltons?
The Wild Thornberrys.
The Wild Thornberrys. Osmonds.
The Osmonds, that's
there you
the
go.
One.
Traveling Wilburys.
I just assumed.
I think you were thinking of the Wild Thornberrys, right?
I assumed that the Traveling Wilburys were all just called Wilburys. Like, is John Wilbury and Martha Wilbury and their children?
No, the Charlie Wilbury.
Kathy Wilbury.
It's about this
Roger
box,
Wilbury.
It's about this box of Wilburys going into a fruit salad. from being picked to your table.
Jesus. It's like a Tesco sponsored food thing.
It's a 2-minute film. Yeah.
So anyway,
Oscar bait.
It's like the Osmonds. These people were. They're getting older now, but
Oscar bait short movies.
Sorry, carry on, Matt.
So they're getting older now, but they were like a band. This family were a band, like musical stuff. They had some limited success in the 80s when our main character Zac Efron was just a babe.
Yeah,
he was the one that they brought out, and he was like, "I ain't gonna pee-pee my bed tonight. I ain't gonna pee-pee my bed
like,
tonight."
And everyone's like, "That's adorable and also kind of weird."
Look it up on YouTube, everyone.
I ain't gonna pee-pee my bed tonight.
Just look it up on YouTube. It's a thing. So you can actually get footage from the
archive footage.
From this film on YouTube if you just search "I ain't gonna pee in my bed tonight." So anyway, they're all singing around, and maybe we see some stock, quote unquote, stock footage of this family when they were younger.
Yeah.
And now they've all retired, but it's like a super fan. has like rocked up.
Oh, he's obsessed with them.
Played by James Corden. and he's like,
oh my god, does he kidnap Zac Efron and his family?
Yeah.
His family have died.
Yeah.
And it's like years after the whole thing.
Oh, he's the only surviving one?
He's the only surviving one.
Wait, no, the bodies would have decomposed.
James Corden is such a super fan that he's dug up the rest
he's
of
preserved,
his family.
He's preserved the other family's corpses in there.
What, that is what, grim.
What's it called? Not carbonite. What's it called? The shark.
Oh, formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde, yeah. He's formaldehyde of them all. And also, like, he's... it's heavily implied that he might have done some of the killings. He might have...
It's kind
of... I don't think anything's implied. I think that's probably we see it, right?
That's Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
That's sort of
so shocking.
Yeah,
it's a psychological thriller.
Yeah, James Corden is sat there on stage with a gun pointed at Zac Efron.
Perform,
but
do your show.
Is the thing.
wait.
Do your show.
I don't think James Corden can do that voice.
He can't do that voice.
Show.
Oh wait, do your show.
Do your show then.
So,
but I think that's why he's such perfect casting is he's not menacing.
Zac Efron in his dreams,
casting him like this,
Zac Efron's dreams, the ghosts of his family come to him and say, "We can't move on because we've been cursed."
Yeah, we need this.
Yeah. By this, we're kind of mixing genres here a little bit.
I'm okay with fantasy. I'm okay with
that. But basically, James Corden has also he's a wizard. He's like he thinks.
Well, I'm okay. I'm okay with it being left ambiguous as to whether the curse is real or not.
Yes,
psychological.
So like James Corden in his bunker, where all these things are in his basement.
Yeah.
He's got all this sort of like black magic kind of pagan stuff, right? And he's also giving Zac Efron drugs. Like he's forcing
what kind of
to
drugs?
keep him docile.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, so everything,
like sedatives.
Yeah, he's constantly and then he like passes out, and then he sees the ghost of his family saying he's been cursed, which James Corden says.
Oh, it's kind of a trippy sequence. Yeah, yeah, okay. Cool.
And then he has to
It's not clear whether it happened.
Like under the cover of this ventriloquist act where he's rigged up this machine to puppet his family, he has to try and escape while that show's on.
Yeah.
So it's a semi Home Alone like or kind of semi 10 Cloverfield Lane, like
10 Cloverfield Lane meets Home Alone meets Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
meets Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
It's the film everyone's wanting, but they're too afraid to ask.
Absolutely, yes.
They don't know they want it until we give it to them. Jesus.
There we go. Enjoy.
There we go.
Enjoy that thought.
My family needs
Ross. No, that was Adam Owen, wasn't it?
Adam Owen, yeah.
Enjoy that thought, Adam.
Can I just go to Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah.
You know how Buffalo Bill has dug that well in his house?
Sure.
Yeah. So that
if he wasn't a serial killer,
give the hose to someone.
If he wasn't a serial killer and he had that much fucking effort behind him, he could have like boosted up the value of his house by digging like a whole other two basements.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a deep fucking well. He dug that for days.
Yeah, he put some effort into it.
I mean, isn't that the thing though, supposedly, with serial killers?
Famously driven serial killers.
Yeah, they do things to other things' exclusion.
Most motivated people in our society.
You'll never find a lazy serial killer.
No, they never will.
They don't clean their houses because they or they do things obsessively, so they'll leave other parts of their life out, so they won't, you know, go and make friends with someone.
Yeah.
Because do you know how much of my time is taken up seeing fucking Friends? If I was just a psychopath, sociopath,
yeah,
I would have so much time to do things.
Yeah.
Like dig a well in my house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I was just thinking, there's an episode of Black Mirror with a lazy serial killer.
Yeah?
In the new series. Yeah.
Oh, I've only watched one episode. I watched the Star Trek one, and that was it.
It's the best episode.
It's a good episode.
Which one has a lazy serial killer?
The one where like woman can look at memories.
Oh yeah, she is a lazy serial killer.
She is a lazy serial killer.
Guess I'll kill this guy.
To the point where the final kill she goes, she own like she does it, but because it's on the way to where she was going anyway.
Yeah. I guess if it's since convenient. I'm passing through.
Yeah, because I'm passing through, I might as well kill this
since
guy.
Since I'm here.
It's like she waits for the victims to come to her.
Yeah, and basically.
Then, and then kills when it's convenient for her.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
Oh, no, that's it.
That's it. Cool.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got another one from Marcus Newman, and that is Profit Margins, Christ's Secret Millions.
Profit as in P.
Yeah. Okay. I think Marcus came up with a good pun.
A good pun, but also...
I reckon it works.
We need to delve into Christ's hidden millions.
To be fair, we have treasure. Done this before.
Oh, really?
Where Christ is a con man.
You guys have done this before.
He's like, the whole thing is to try and like...
No, this is like The Social Network, but with a very lucrative book deal. In which he swindles the other disciples out of the money for the Bible,
and he's got this rival bookseller, like a rival publisher out there who's like selling The Way Forward, how I don't know, Moses was real, the best one, and yeah. He's the son of God.
Moses
and
was
then,
obviously
and
that.
He goes in and he's like, what? In my father's house? And he turns over all the tables full of books.
They were selling, like in that temple, they were selling copies of rip-off Bibles. Or like he was writing the Bible at the time.
And they were saying things like, oh, you need to make sacrifices. And he was just like, no! That's not in canon.
But like,
he was living his own fictionalized life as he was, you know, living it.
I just love the idea of all these books. Like, basically, it's an early version of Waterstones. Basically, right. So like Moses stones.
Well, it was named after a stone by the water.
Yeah, like the
it could just be water
the stone tablets. That's what it was named
all right,
after.
Here's an idea. Okay,
Moses Stone.
So Jesus gets a really early success.
Jesus played by Timothy Dalton.
Alison Brie.
I'm going to go with Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton plays Jesus. That's good
Jesus
casting.
Played by Timothy Dalton, and he gets a really good success with his first collection of short stories about God.
Right. It's an anthology.
It's called
published in the Jerusalem
old,
Times.
The Old Testament.
Yeah. Mm. And nobody knows why. Is there another one coming out? Is there a sequel?
The Old Testament is...
Well,
yeah.
He's working... Right, he's made a bit of money off it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But he's working on a sequel.
Right.
And he's made a bit of money, so he's able to go around the country hiring writers.
Okay.
Matthew.
Yeah.
Mark. Luke. John.
Yeah, okay.
We don't need to know their surnames, not important.
No, it doesn't matter. Not
no,
for
they
movie.
Didn't. They didn't have surnames.
Yeah.
They're Christian names.
I've also got a scene, right, in which they go to wherever Jesus... Was it Garden of Gethsemane where he was buried? Yeah.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and the boulder's
I
gone.
I only want to say...
Because they hid all the all cash right. for the Bible book deal in that. They turn up on the Sunday as like... Where the fuck is the money?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. That's the thing. Jesus has promised them a sizable advance on their work.
He made a deal with Pilate to get him crucified, so he didn't have to pay it off.
So they have a good finish.
So yeah, but so he's riding along. He's going around the country. That's the thing. All his apostles, right, are kind of writers for him. They're like writing his jokes, writing his speeches and stuff, and then they're supposed to be writing like logging what he's doing.
Mm.
But he's doing the majority of the writing, and he's writing about himself, all the good deeds he's done. But he's got to have something that's based on, like, got to base it on something. So he's going out, actually going out and doing, like, weird magic tricks, swindles and stuff to make people believe he's done these things. And then those people will go out and buy the book to find out all the other things he's done. It's like they're giant publicity stunts.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Like David Blaine style walking on water stunts and stuff. And
why isn't David Blaine playing Jesus?
David Blaine plays one of the apostles.
John,
let's say.
But I'm thinking, like, he makes, like, because he realizes that he's getting all this money from the Bible, writing it and stuff like that. He's got to fake his own death.
Yeah.
To get out and not have to pay the rest
any of the writers.
So when they turn up at that cave,
yeah,
and it's like, he's gone. So is the money. They kept all the cash, all the in dollar the bills in that cave.
That was his money cave. Everyone back then had one.
And then he's just riding away on a donkey with Pilot.
Right. Ryan Gosling.
Kissing each other.
Wearing
sunglasses.
Ryan Gosling. This whole film is told from the perspective of, like, Luke, who's played by Ryan Gosling.
Okay. He's our everyman.
Yeah. And so, like, he's been picked up on by this very charismatic... Because we can't have Jesus as a protagonist in this.
No.
Can I change my Jesus casting?
Okay.
To Michael Keaton.
Okay.
Yes. It was a good...
charismatic con man kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Jesus is, like, going around and he's arranging these things and hiring them as writers. And he's paying their way a little bit, but he's like, there's going to be a big payoff around sort of Easter time, he says. Around Easter time.
What's Easter? Don't worry about it.
Around Easter time, you're gonna get paid.
Yeah.
Big time. And he's
oh my god, because it's the end of the tax year. Almost.
So there's a whole thing where they're like helping him. They help him get away with these kind of trumped up charges, or get him, or like they kind of bribe. They spend all this money, all the money they've got so far.
Let me ask
bribing you. Jesus, not bribing Jesus, bribing Pilate to send him to like a corrupt sort of crucifixion place that only like ties you to the
fakery. Let me ask you: does Jesus ever intend to pay them, or is he
Is he because the final act is like the stone's been rolled away. Like, Jesus is gone with all the money.
Yeah. Jesus and Pilate taking it off over the desert. Like, they're properly, like, going, like, Lawrence of Arabia kind of style shot.
Slouching towards
galloping
Bethlehem.
Away.
Yeah. I don't think
galloping away, the dollar bills sort of trailing.
I don't think we see them. I think basically we keep focused on the apostles, who all have to then write sequels. Mm. They each write their own book of sequels to try and cash in on the brand now that Jesus is gone.
Yeah, they're doing their best.
They have the IP. So they have the Jesus IP. So they're just trying to make. And he was like, and Ryan Gosling's like, well, it all worked out in the end. You know, Matthew, Mark, John, and I are pretty good writers after all. And
yeah, we'll be a team.
Oh, what Jesus didn't realize is that we kept all the residuals.
But I think a post-credit scene, Luke is in a cafe in
Bethlehem.
In Bethlehem, and he sees Jesus sat there, and he pulls a gun out, and he's like, "You bitch, you're gonna pay." It took me 20 years to find you. And Jesus just gulps and then cuts to black.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, for God's sake.
Not coming back here again.
Yeah, it was prophet margins.
It's good.
Lord. That's a good one. I like that one. I always like when we do biblical...
Yeah. It's the only source material we both know off by heart.
We could put that genre in. Biblical epic.
Yeah.
I'd love to do an entire episode on it. Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Life's a Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really. Maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone. And maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Bye.